Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge, and I'm the director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robison, Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Thank you. Good to see you, Tristan, and welcome to all those that may be joining us.
Great to see you, Lyndon. Lyndon and I share a passion for the concept of social capital, and we each have a long history of work on the concept, with Lyndon initially coming to it from economics, whereas I came from sociology and social theory. And our different backgrounds and perspectives make for interesting conversations and engaging debates in our weekly episodes. In this episode, we'll discuss the role of commonalities in social capital. Commonalities are an important part of many theories of social capital. For example, bonding social capital is often understood to be the connections between people who are similar, and the concept of homophily is often cited. Other theories of social capital may refer to shared understandings, that is, understandings that we share, that we therefore have in common. And when I think of commonalities in the context of social capital, I typically think about the things we have in common with others that create and strengthen connections. So, Lyndon, how would you describe commonalities in the context of social capital?
Well, great question, and I enjoy very much these times we have to talk about concepts like social capital and commonalities. I suppose in response to your question, I would start by saying when I study the definitions of social capital, the one thing that a lot of people agree on is that social capital has to do with relationships between people, even if we can't agree precisely on the nature or the definition of social capital. We tend to agree that it has to do with relationships. And so then the next question is, what is a relationship? And a relationship is simply a connection, how people are connected. And so the idea of commonality recognizes that if people are going to be connected, they have to be connected by something they share. And in that regard, in the past, I've at least focused on things that we share that we acquired at birth, inherited commonalities, or things that we were able to earn, and call those earned commonalities, such as where we work, where we went to school, what preferences we've acquired. And there's a third category that is kind of in between, which you might refer to as covenant commonalities that are stronger than earned commonalities, such as a marriage contract, a pledge of citizenship or something like that. So at least commonalities are what we share in common that help us connect to each other, that can be either earned, inherited, or created through a covenant.
So quite often when people think about commonalities, and I guess quite often when the concept of homophily is discussed, it's the physical characteristics, you know, it's perhaps race and age and gender and so forth that are described as being the commonalities that are important. But what do you think are the most important commonalities when it comes to social capital?
So the idea of homophily is often described with a little couplet, birds of a feather flock together, and homophily is simply saying we're attracted to each other, to others with whom we share the same feather, if you wanted to use that analogy. So, but not all commonalities are equally important. For example, in a large city, lots of people may find their names in the same telephone book, but that certainly isn't the basis for much of a relationship. So for a commonality to really be effective in creating a connection, it has to lead to the exchange of what something significant that I refer to as a relational good, an intangible signal that satisfies a social emotional need. It could be an exchange of a commodity on favorable terms that signals something more than an arm's length relationship. So when we discuss and describe important commonalities, they must have, or this important characteristic, that in important ways they lead to exchanges that change our well-being, that create relational goods that satisfy a social emotional need. They lead to commodity exchanges that address our physical needs. So they somehow are involved in an important exchange.
So is there something about the commonality then that gives it meaning? You know, that simply being in the same telephone book is a commonality that doesn't have any meaning and significance. Whereas if we're in the same yearbook because we went to the same high school at the same time, that may or may not, for different individuals, have some significance. And so that is a commonality that is important. So it seems like a lot of the commonalities that we have, we interpret, we see in others, or we may come to understand those commonalities. You know, I might be talking with somebody and not realize that they have the same kinds of challenges in their life that I do, and that commonality then is the basis then for a connection. So is that where we're going with this? That, like, through how do commonalities create connections? How do they shape the nature of social capital?
Well, first of all, if let's say that we both enjoy soccer, or as you might say, football, but we never have a reason to be in the same sphere where we meet each other or discuss our favorite team or so on, that we may have a commonality, but the commonality requires the opportunity to connect through the exchange of relational goods or commodities. So let's say that we happen to be on the same plane together, seated to each other, and before that time we had never, we didn't have any connection, we didn't have a relationship. And then the conversation turns to soccer, and we start talking about our shared enthusiasm or a recollection of past important events. And suddenly we find out, goodness, we have a lot in common. And the fact that we acknowledge in each other an important characteristic or an important trait leads to a connection based on this commonality. But it required us to sit together. It's sort of like being in the same phone book. There has to be an opportunity to exchange either relational goods or commodities.
So people in other disciplines may talk about a big aspect of this being sense of belonging, that when we both like soccer, we therefore feel like we belong to the same social grouping, and that is kind of what is creating the connection. And different disciplines may talk about other terminology to describe a similar thing. So this seems to be multifaceted in the way that it works, or at least multiple ways of describing how it works.
So here's if our relationships depended on interpersonal exchanges, our sphere of relationships might be limited, but they can be extended much more broadly through things that we embed with relational goods. For example, for years, I belonged to the Rotary Club, and we had our high attachment value goods that had embedded with relational goods, the wheel and songs and so on, that as a Rotarian, I thought, okay, I share these connections. And so one time when I was visiting in Sweden and attended a Rotary club meeting, I was immediately embraced by others, even though we had never met. But we were connected through important shared symbols, and we routinely connected with the symbols. We had projects, we sang songs, and so on. So the idea of commonalities can be attachment value goods embedded with relational goods that can connect people in groups, even though they may not have face-to-face exchanges. For example, you may belong to the same country, the same club, the same, a lot of things that you're connected to others. And it's sort of a latent connection that as soon as you connect and you realize that you have those commonalities, you find it very easily to establish a relationship.
And so these various symbols and rituals and these things can communicate meaning to others. And I guess like in Australia, we would think, well, if you're both a member of Rotary, you must be a pretty good bloke. So therefore, that meaning is attributed to you, and therefore I'm going to be friends with you. You're going to be my friend. Just purely because of that identity, that symbol. And the meaning that's contributed, that's passed through it. So there's lots of ways that then this can be this meaning can be passed to other individuals.
I'll tell you perhaps the most important commonality that we all have benefited from is that we don't know each other, but we know the same person. And that same person, which is a commonality, we both have a relationship with that same person, then is can be perform the role of a broker that will bring us together. So, how many times have you been connected to another person because you both knew the broker or the person in between? This is particularly relevant to me because my wife and I never knew each other before our common friend introduced us, and we wouldn't have been, well, the sto our stories would have been a lot different if we would have never met. Now, the question then emerges is to connect people, does it need to be the commonality of another person? Can it be sort of an impersonal commonality like a dating site or, a concert or a football game that brings us together? There's lots of things that could perform that intermediary or brokerage role to bring people together and build a relationship.
Yeah, and so how we feel about that intermediary clearly plays a role. Like we were saying about Rotary, like it's the values that we associate with Rotary that passes that significance through that commonality. Whereas simply being a member of a particular dating site for different individuals may or may not contribute and pass any sort of meaning and significance to the other people that you meet through that intermediary. So it plays a significant role.
Agreed, agreed. And there's another sort of feature of relationships, and that is one of the reasons we form relationships is we expect something of value to result. We expect that because of this relationship, we'll exchange, or maybe there will be some commodities that we'll exchange and preferential terms or these relational goods that make us feel belonging or validated and so on. And so it often is with an eye to the value of making the effort to make that connection that determines if we search for our commonalities. And I was reminded of that on a recent airline flight. A couple came in, they sat down beside me. They seemed like a delightful couple. I was in the middle of a paper and working on something, and the flight was only going to last a couple of hours. And I said to myself, I could make an effort to get to know this couple, and maybe it would be worthwhile, but it would mean I'll have to give up working on what I'm doing, and the chance is very, very high that in an hour and a half we'll stand up, walk off the plane, and I'll never see them again. And is that really worth my effort? And I've heard that expressed by elderly people saying, I just don't have enough time to make a lot of new friends, meaning I don't know how many years I've got left. And really intense relationships take a lot of time and a lot of effort to invest and build them. So I don't know, it's very economic like to talk about building relationships, investing in relationships, but it may not be completely inappropriate to think about the benefits that we derive from relationships.
Yeah, and I think it's also a good point that we can find commonalities with people, even if they appear to be very different to ourselves, and that all it takes is communication, careful listening and thinking and asking people and exploring different areas that where you might share common views or common interests or whatever it may be. And through that process, someone who appears to be altogether different than ourselves and foreign and who we probably wouldn't be friends with, but given the opportunity, or given the effort, I suppose, you may find a lot of commonalities and a lot of shared interests, and then you might leave that conversation with a new friend who you feel quite strongly, positively about. And quite often, the only barrier is actually taking the time and effort and interest to do it. That it can be done with virtually anybody, of course, maybe not everybody, but more often than not, I think you would find commonalities.
I couldn't agree more, Tristan. And in fact, I'm feeling a little bit guilty that I didn't make an effort to search for commonalities with this fine young couple that I was sitting next to. And probably the next time I will make the effort. But I would like to maybe turn our conversation in just a slightly different direction. We've been talking as though commonalities will create positive outcomes. But what if the commonality leads to a competitive relationship? I mean, we're both striving for the same goal. On a holiday occasion one time, I saw, or I wasn't participating, but customers were lined outside the store's door, trying to be first in line because there was a quota on who would get access to these deep discounts. And these people waiting in line had a lot in common. They all wanted to benefit from the reduced price, provided they were first in line. And they approached each other not with the idea of building empathy or something like that. They viewed each other as possibly denying them the advantages of getting in the store first. So I guess, what do you think about? Are all commonalities going to lead to us holding hands and singing Kumbaya, or where do we go with this?
No, most certainly not. I mean, I think identification of commonalities shapes the nature of the relationship. But of course, as we know, the relationship can make many turns. It can have many different characteristics. And, people you were sitting next to on the plane, potentially through discussions, you would find commonalities or perhaps differences that really wouldn't have produced a positive and strong relationship. And as you've highlighted as well through the concept of cheap social capital, sometimes the commonalities we find where they're against some other entity can create negative outcomes as well. It may create a connection between yourself and the other person you find the commonality with, but because it's a shared antipathy towards something or someone, or some other group, it can create negative outcomes anyway. So I think there's a huge scope for different outcomes to occur. But thinking about the process of developing these relationships is as partly about finding commonalities is a useful way to think about it.
Indeed, and you raised the concept of what if the shared commonality is our mutual dislike or disregard for another person. In the US, we're in a political season now, and nothing, if you express a preference or dislike for one or the other candidate, you may either make an instant connection or an instant conflict. And so, but the nature of creating shared commonalities or a commonality of shared antipathy, it's a very inexpensive way to build a relationship, but a not a very meaningful relationship. And it doesn't last long, when it depends on having a shared object of antipathy. And the worrisome thing is that because it's so inexpensive and so easy to create a relationship by forming shared antipathy, that it will be overused instead of the really meaningful connections that lead to exchange of relational goods.
Yeah, it certainly can. Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode. Thanks, Lyndon, again for such a fascinating conversation, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you, Tristan.